Audible Inc. and Harlequin present Poison Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman. Chapter 17. Standing next to the two oversized soldiers, I felt like a plum wedged between a couple of cantaloupes. Misgivings crept into my mind. The notion that I could defend myself against someone of Ari's build seemed ridiculous. If he wanted, he could pick me up and throw me over his shoulder, and there was nothing I could do about it. Okay, first we'll start with some self-defense, Ari explained. No weapons until the basic moves are instinctive. You're better off fighting hand-to-hand than wielding a weapon you don't know how to use. A skilled opponent would simply disarm you. Then your troubles would be doubled. Not only would you be under attack, but you'd have to counter your own weapon. Ari leaned his practice sword next to Jenko's, scanning the training yard. Most of the soldiers were gone, but small clumps of men still worked. What are your strengths? Ari asked. Strengths? What are you good at? Jenko, sensing my confusion, prompted, Are you a fast runner? That's a handy skill. Oh, I finally understood. I'm flexible. I used to be an acrobat. Perfect. Coordination and agility are excellent skills. And? Ari grabbed me around the waist. He threw me high into the air. My limbs flailed a moment before instinct kicked in. Still in midair, I tucked my chin, arms, and legs close to my body, executed a somersault to align myself, and landed on my feet, wobbling to regain my balance. Outraged, I turned on Ari. Before I could demand an explanation, he said, Another advantage of having acrobatic training is the ability to stay on your feet. That maneuver of yours could mean the difference between life and death. Right, Jenko? Jenko rubbed the vacant spot where the lower half of his right ear used to be. It helps. You know who else would make a great fighter? Ari's shoulders sagged as if he knew what Jenko was going to say next and resigned himself to it. Intrigued, I asked, Who? A dancer. With the proper training, the fire dancers at the festival could take on anyone. With a blazing staff spinning around, I wouldn't go against one with any weapon. Except a pail of water, Ari countered. He and Jenko then launched into an intense argument, debating the technical aspects of a fight against a fiery staff wielded by an enraged dancer. Although fascinated by the discussion, I had to interrupt them. My time was limited. The commander's dinner would soon be served. With only occasional sarcastic comments about fire dancers, Ari and Jenko spent the remainder of my first lesson teaching me to block punches, then kicks, until my forearms were numb. Ari halted the exercise when another soldier approached. His and Jenko's relaxed postures tightened. They shifted to defensive stances as Nix, the guard from Captain Parfit's unit, came closer. The skin on Nix's bald head was sunburned, and his thin fringe of black hair lay damply on his forehead. An overpowering stench of body odor preceded him, gagging me. His lean muscles reminded me of a slender coil of rope, dangerous when pulled tight.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Nix demanded. That's what the hell do you think you're doing, sir, Jenko corrected him. We outrank you, and I think a salute would be a nice touch.
Nix sneered.
You'll lose your promotion when your boss finds out you're associating with a criminal. Whose brainless idea was it to make her into a more effective killer? When another dead body shows up, you'll be accomplices.
Jenko took a menacing step toward Nix, but Ari's meaty hand on his shoulder stopped him. With undertones of a threat laced into his voice, Ari said, What we do with our free time is none of your business. Now why don't you shuffle off to Parfit? I saw him heading toward the latrines. He'll need you to wipe his ass soon. It's the one skill you're most suited for. Nix was outnumbered, but he couldn't resist a parting shot.
She has a history of killing her benefactor. I'd watch my necks if I were you.
Ari's and Jenko's eyes stayed on Nix's back until he left the yard. Then they turned to me. That's a good start, Ari said, ending the lesson. See you tomorrow at dawn. What about Nix? I asked. No problem. We can take care of him. Ari shrugged it off, confident in his ability to deal with Nix.
I envied Ari's self-assurance and physical power. I didn't think I could handle Nyx, and I wondered if there was another reason, besides killing Rayad, that made Nyx hate me. "I taste the commander's breakfast at dawn," I said. "Then right after." "What for?" I asked.
"The soldiers run laps around the compound to keep in shape," Jenko answered.
"Join them," Ari said. "Do at least 5 circuits. More if you're able. We'll increase the amount until you've caught up to us."
"How many laps do you run?"
50.
I gulped.
As I returned to the castle, I thought of the work and time I would need to devote to training. Learning self-defense would require the same commitment I had applied to my acrobatics. I couldn't go halfway. It had seemed like a good idea at the time. I had been giddy with fairy tale visions of easily fighting off Brazel's guards. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized this wasn't something to do on a whim. I wondered if I would be better off spending my time learning about poisons and magic. In the end, all the physical training in the world wouldn't save me from Iris's magical powers. My feet dragged on the ground, and my body felt as if it were pulling a wagon full of stones. Why couldn't I just go for it? Why was I constantly considering each option, searching both sides of an argument for gaps in the logic? Like somersaulting on the trampoline, plenty of ups and downs, but no forward motion. I longed for the days when a wrong decision wouldn't cost me my life. By the time I reached the commander's office, I had concluded that I had other enemies besides the magician, and being able to defend myself might save my life someday. Knowledge, whatever the form, could be as effective as a weapon. Soon after I arrived, one of the tutors bustled into the office, dragging a young girl with him. At age 12, every child was assigned a profession based on their capabilities, and then they were sent to the appropriate tutor for 4 years to learn. The tutor's red uniform had black diamonds stitched on the collar, making it the direct opposite of an advisor's black uniform. The girl wore the simple red jumper of a student. Her brown eyes were shiny with unshed tears. Her facial expressions alternated between terror and defiance as she battled to compose herself. I guessed she was about 15 years old.
"What's the problem, Beaven?" the commander asked, annoyance tainting his voice.
"This disobedient child is a constant disruption to my class."
"In what way?"
"Mia is a know-it-all. She refuses to solve mathematical problems in the traditional manner, and has the gall to correct me in front of the entire class."
"Why are you here?"
"I want her disciplined. Whipped, preferably, and reassigned as a servant."
Beaven's request caused silent tears to spill down Mia's cheeks, although she maintained her composure, which was impressive for someone so young. The commander steepled his fingers, considering. I cringed for the girl. Having her tutor bother the commander for this dispute would not help her. Beaven must have gone over the training coordinator.
"I'll handle it," the commander finally said. "You're dismissed."
Beaven wavered for a moment, opening and closing his mouth several times. His pinched expression revealed that this was not the response he had expected. Nodding stiffly, he left the office. The commander pushed his chair away from the desk and gestured to Mia to come around. "Now eye level with her," he asked.
"What's your side of the story?"
With a thin, quavering voice, she answered,
"I'm good with numbers, sir."
She hesitated, as if expecting to be corrected for making a bold statement, but when none came, she continued,
"I was bored solving mathematical problems Tutor Beaven's way, so I invented new and faster ways. He's not good with numbers, sir."
Again she stopped, flinching as though she was anticipating a blow.
"I made the mistake of pointing out his errors. I'm sorry, sir. Please don't whip me, sir. I'll never do it again, sir. I'll follow Tutor Beaven's every command."
Tears flowed down her bright pink cheeks.
"No, you won't," the commander replied.
Terror gripped the girl's face.
"Relax, child. Yelena?"
Startled, I spilled some of his tea. I had been holding his tray.
"Yes, sir."
"Fetch Advisor Watts."
"Yes, sir."
I put the tray on the desk and hurried through the door. I had met Watts once. He was the commander's accountant, who had given me the money I had earned playing fugitive.
He was working at his desk, but immediately followed me back to the office.
Watts, do you still need an assistant? The commander asked.
Yes, sir, Watts replied.
Mia, you have one day to prove yourself. If you don't dazzle Advisor Watts with your mathematical skills, then you'll have to return to Beaven's class. If you do, then you can have the job. Agreed?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Mia's pretty face was radiant as she trailed behind Watts. I marveled at the commander. Being compassionate, hearing Mia's side of the story, and giving her a chance were the exact opposite of how I imagined the encounter would play out. Why would a man with such power take the time to go that extra step? He risked upsetting Beaven and the coordinator. Why would he bother to encourage a student? His stack of reports reclaimed the commander's attention, so I slipped out the door, heading toward the library to continue my research. After a while, the sun began to set. I picked out a promising botany book to take with me, as I was reluctant to have a lantern light betray my presence in the library. The candlelight cast a dismal glow in the corridors. I watched my shadow glide along the walls as I headed for Valak's suite, wondering if I should move back to my old room in the servants' wing. Now that Brazel was gone, there was no logical reason for me to remain with Valak. But the thought of living in that small room, where I wouldn't have anyone to argue with or to discuss poisoning methods with, left a hollow feeling inside me. That same empty pang I'd been having on and off these last 4 days. Only the cold darkness greeted me when I entered Valak's suite. My disappointment surprised me, and I realized I had been missing him. I shook my head at the foreign concept. Me? Miss Valak? No. I couldn't allow myself to think that way. Instead, I focused on my survival. If I wanted to discover an antidote to butterfly's dust, paging through books on counteracting poisons while sitting in Valak's living room wouldn't be the smartest idea. Of course, the decision might not be mine to make. Once Valak found out Brazel had gone, he'd probably order me to move back anyway. After I had lit the lanterns in Valak's suite, I relaxed on the couch with the botany book. Biology had never been a favorite subject of mine, and I soon found my mind wandering. My weak efforts to remain focused were lost to my daydreams. A muffled slam brought my attention back to the present. It sounded like a book hitting the floor. I glanced down, but my volume remained in my lap, open to a particularly boring passage about fruit trees. I scanned the living room to see if one of Valak's untidy piles of books had fallen over. Sighing at his mess, I couldn't tell if something had toppled or not. A frightening thought crept into my mind. Maybe the noise had come from upstairs. Maybe it hadn't been a book, but a person. Someone sneaking in to wait until I fell asleep to kill me. Unable to sit still, I grabbed a lantern and dashed into my room. My backpack rested on the bureau. Rand hadn't asked for his knife yet, so I hadn't returned it. Pulling the blade from the pack, Ari's words about misusing a weapon flew through my mind. It was probably foolish to take the knife, but I felt more confident with it in my hand. Armed, I returned to the living room and considered my next move. Sleep would be impossible tonight until I investigated the upstairs rooms. Blackness from above pressed down on my meager light as I ascended the staircase. Curving to the right, the stairs ended in a sitting room. Piles of boxes, books, and furniture were scattered throughout the room in a haphazard fashion, casting odd-shaped shadows on the walls. I maneuvered with caution around the heaps. My blood slammed in my heart as I shone my lantern into dark corners, searching for an ambush. A flash of light caused a yip to escape my lips. I spun, only to discover it was my own lantern reflecting in the tall, thin windows that striped the far wall. Three rooms were located to the right of the sitting chamber. A quick, heart-pumping check of the box-filled rooms revealed they were empty of ambushers and identical to the three off the downstairs living area. To the left of the upstairs sitting area was a long hallway. Doorways lined the right side of the corridor opposite a smooth stone wall. The hall ended in a set of locked double wooden doors. Carved into the ebony wood was an elaborate hunting scene. By the thin coating of white powder on the floor beneath the doors, I guessed this was the entrance to Valak's bedroom. The powder would show footprints, alerting Valak to an intruder. I breathed easier seeing the powder undisturbed. As I systematically checked the remaining rooms along the corridor, the growing realization that Valak was a true pack rat struck me. I had always imagined assassins as creatures of the dark, traveling light and never staying in one place for too long. Valak's suite resembled the house of an old married couple who had filled their rooms with all the things they had collected over the years. Distracted by these thoughts, I opened the last doorway. It took me some time to properly register what I saw. Compared to the others, the room was barren. One long table lined the back wall, centered under a large, teardrop-shaped window. Gray rock streaked with white, the same stones I had been tripping over in Valak's living room and office for the past month and a half, were arranged by size on the floor. A thick layer of dust scrunched under my boots when I walked into the room. On the table, carving chisels, metal sanding files, and a grinding wheel occupied the only dust-free spots. Small statues in various stages of creation were interspersed among the tools. To my delight, I realized that the gray rocks, when carved and polished, metamorphosed into a beautiful, lustrous black, and the white streaks transformed into brilliant silver. Setting the lantern on the table, I picked up a finished butterfly with silver spots sparkling from its wings. It fit into the palm of my hand. The detail was so exquisite that it appeared the butterfly might beat its wings and lift into the air at any moment. I admired the other statues. The same devoted care had been applied to each. Lifelike animals, insects, and flowers lined the table. Apparently, nature provided the artist's favorite subjects. Stunned, I realized Valak must be the artist. Here was a side of Valak I never imagined existed. I felt as though I had intruded upon his most personal secret, as if I had uncovered a wife and children living up here in happy seclusion, complete with the family dog. I had noticed the figurines on Valak's desk, and at least once a day I glanced at the snow cat in the commander's office, attempting to understand why he had selected that particular statue for display. I now understood its significance. Valak had carved it for the commander. The shuffle of feet made me whirl around. A black shape rushed me. My knife was yanked from my grasp and pressed against my neck. Fear clenched my throat tight, suffocating me. The familiar feeling triggered a sudden flashback of soldiers disarming and dragging me off Rayad's dead body. But Valak's face showed mirth instead of wrath. "Snooping?" Valak asked, stepping back. With effort, I banished my fear and remembered to start breathing again. "I heard a noise. I came to investigate." Valak finished my sentence. "Searching for an intruder is different from examining statues." He pointed with the knife to the butterfly clutched in my hand. "You were snooping." "Yes." "Good. Curiosity is a commendable trait. I wondered when you would explore up here. Find anything interesting?" I held up the butterfly. "It's beautiful." He shrugged. "Carving focuses my mind." I placed the statue on the table, my hand lingering over it. I would have enjoyed studying the butterfly in the sunlight. Grabbing the lantern, I followed Valak from the room. "I really did hear a noise," I said. "I know. I knocked a book over to see what you would do. I didn't expect a knife, though. Is it the one missing from the kitchen?" "Did Rand report it?" I felt betrayed. Why hadn't he just asked for it back? "No. It just makes sense to keep track of large kitchen knives, so when one goes missing, you're not surprised when someone attacks you with it." Valak handed the knife back. "You should return it. Knives won't help you against the caliber of people after you." Valak and I descended the stairs. I lifted the botany book from the couch. "What does the commander think of the pods?" Valak asked. "He thinks they're from Sitya. He returned them to me so I could discover what they are. I've been doing research in the library." I showed Valak the books. He took it from me and flipped through the pages. "Find anything?" "Not yet." "Your actions as our fugitive must have impressed the commander. Normally, he would have assigned this sort of thing to one of his science advisors." Valak's words made me uncomfortable. I wasn't convinced that I could discover the origin of the pods and beans. The idea of failing the commander made me queasy. I changed the subject.
Where did the caravan go?
Valak paused, undecided. Finally, he said, Brazil's new factory. If Valak had been surprised by his discovery, it didn't show on his face.
It occurred to me that despite all the discussion about Brazil's permit, I didn't know what he was planning to make.
What's the product?
It's supposed to be a feed mill. Valak handed the book back to me, and I don't know why he would need those pods and beans. Maybe they're a secret ingredient.
Maybe they're added to the feed to enhance the cow's milk supply.
Then every farmer would buy Brazil's feed instead of growing his own.
Or something along that line.
Or maybe not. I'm not an expert.
Valak pulled at his hair. I'll have to study his permit to see what I'm missing. Either way, I assigned some of my corps to stake out the route and infiltrate the factory. At this point, I need more information.
Brazil left the castle this afternoon.
I passed his retinue on my way back.
Good. One less thing to worry about.
Valak crossed to his desk and began sorting through his papers. I watched his back for a while, waiting. He didn't mention my moving out. I finally worked up the nerve to ask.
Should I return to my old room now that Brazil's gone?
I berated myself for my choice of words. I should have been firmer, but it was too late.
Valak stopped. I held my breath.
No, he said. You're still in danger. The magician hasn't been dealt with yet.
His pen resumed its course over the paper.
Strong relief flushed through my body like a hot wave, alarming me. Why did I want to stay with him? Remaining was dangerous, illogical, and, by every argument I could muster, the worst situation for me. The book on magic was still hidden in my backpack, which went with me everywhere because I feared Valak would pull one of his stunts and surprise me.
Damn it, I thought, angry at myself. As if I didn't have enough to worry about. I shouldn't miss Valak. I should try harder to escape. I shouldn't figure out the bean puzzle. I should sabotage it. I shouldn't admire and respect him. I should vilify him. Shouldn't, should, shouldn't, should. So easy to say, but so hard to believe.
Exactly how do you deal with a magician? I asked.
He turned around in his seat and looked at me.
I've told you before.
But their powers
have no effect on me.
When I get close, I can feel their power pressing and vibrating on my skin, and moving toward them is like walking through thick syrup. It takes effort, but I always win in the end. Always.
How close?
Valak had been in the castle both times I had unknowingly used magic. Did Valak suspect?
I have to be in the same room, Valak said.
Relief washed through me. He didn't know. At least not yet.
Why didn't you kill the southern magician at the festival? I asked.
Yelena, I'm not invincible.
Fighting four men while she threw every ounce of her power at me was exhausting. Chasing her down would have been a fruitless endeavor.
I thought about what he said. Is being resistant to magic a form of magic? I asked.
No. Valak's face hardened.
What about the knife?
I pointed to the long blade hanging on the wall. The crimson blood gleamed in the lantern light. In the 3 weeks I'd lived in Valak's suite, it hadn't dried.
Valak laughed.
That was the knife I used to kill the king. He was a magician. When his magic couldn't stop me from plunging that knife into his heart, he cursed me with his dying breath.
It was rather melodramatic.
He willed that I should be plagued with guilt over his murder and have his blood stain my hands forever. With my peculiar immunity to magic, the curse attached to the knife instead of me.
Valak looked at the weapon's wall thoughtfully.
It was a shame to lose my favorite blade, but it does make for a nice trophy.
Chapter 18.
My lungs blazed. Flushed and sweat-soaked, I lagged behind the main group of soldiers, my throat burning with every gasp. It was my fourth lap around the castle complex. One more to go.
I had hovered by the northeast barracks right after tasting the commander's breakfast. When a large clump of soldiers ran past, I spotted Ari, who waved me to join in. I worried that the other guards would resent my presence, but there were servants, stable boys, and other castle workers mixed in with the soldiers. The first two laps quickened my pulse and shortened my breath. Pain began in my feet during the third lap and traveled up my legs by the fourth. My surroundings blurred until all I saw was the small patch of ground right in front of me. When I limped to my finishing point, ending my agony, I found a thick row of hedges and threw up my breakfast of sweet cakes. Straightening, I saw a grinning Jenko give me a thumbs up as he jogged by. He didn't even have the decency to look winded, and his shirt was still dry. As I wiped vomit off my lip, Ari paused beside me. "Training yard, 2 o'clock. See you then," he said. "But," I said to nobody as Ari jogged away. I could hardly stand. I couldn't imagine doing anything more strenuous. In the training yard that afternoon, Ari and Jenko leaned against the fence watching two men sparring with swords. The loud ring of metal striking metal echoed. The fighters had drawn the attention of every soldier. I realized with surprise that one of the men was Valak. I hadn't seen him since early that morning, and I had assumed he was resting after being up late the night before. Valak was liquid in motion. As I watched him, one word came to my mind. Beautiful. His movements had the speed and cadence of a complex dance performance. In comparison, his adversary resembled a newborn colt, lurching and jerking his arms and legs as if this were his first time on his feet. Valak's smooth lunges and graceful parries disarmed his opponent in no time. Pointing with his sword, he sent his beaten foe to a small group of men and motioned for another to attack. "What's going on?" I asked.
"Valak's challenge," Jenko said.
"What's that?"
"Valak has declared a challenge to anyone in Ixia. Beat him in a fight with the weapon of your choice, or hand-to-hand, and you can be promoted to a second-in-command."
Ari gestured to Valak, now engaged in combat with a third man.
"It's become a sort of graduation from basic training for the soldiers to fight Valak at least once, although you can try as many times as you like. The captains watch the matches and recruit the more promising soldiers, and if you manage to impress Valak with your skills, he may offer you a post in his elite intelligence corps."
"How did you guys do?" I asked.
"Okay," Ari demurred.
"Okay," Jenko snorted. "Ari came close to beating him. Valak was pleased. But Ari would rather be a scout than a spy."
"I want all or nothing," Ari said with a quiet intensity. We continued to watch. Ari and Jenko made technical comments about the different fights, but I couldn't tear my eyes from Valak. With the sunlight glinting off his sword, he dispatched two more men. He tapped them with the flat of his weapon, just to let them know he had broken through their defenses without shedding any blood. The next opponent approached with a knife.
"Bad choice," Ari said.
Valak put down his sword and unsheathed his blade. The match was over in two moves.
"Valak excels in knife fighting," Jenko commented.
The last challenger was a woman. Tall and agile, she wielded a long wooden staff. Ari called it a bow. She held her own against Valak, and their sparring lasted longer than any of the previous six fights. With a loud crack, her bow snapped in two, ending the match. As the crowd dispersed, Valak spoke with the woman.
"That's Marin," Ari said. "If she doesn't disappear into Valak's core, you should ask her to teach you the bow. With your smaller size, it would extend your reach against a taller attacker."
"But you can't conceal a bow," I said.
"Not around the castle. But if you're hiking through the woods, you wouldn't look out of place holding a walking stick."
I looked at Marin and considered the possibilities. Would she agree to help me? Probably not. What would she stand to gain? As if reading my thoughts, Ari said,
"Marin's aggressive and encouraging. Every new female recruit gets her personal attention, whether they want it or not. Since so many women fail due to the rigors of training, she tries to coach them through. We've more women in the guard now than ever because of her. We tried to get her to teach us. A bow would make a good weapon for a scout, but she has no interest in training men."
"But I'm not a new recruit. I'm the food taster. Why would she waste her time with me? I might be dead by tomorrow."
"Aren't we grumpy today?" Jenko said cheerfully.
Too much exercise this morning?
Shut up, I said. Unfazed, his grin only widened.
All right, that's enough. Let's get started, Ari said.
I spent the rest of the afternoon learning to punch someone without breaking my hand and practicing the proper technique of kicking. The first two knuckles of both hands turned bright red as I punched into a training bag over and over. Mastering the front kick was a challenge since my stiff thigh muscles hindered my flexibility. When Ari finally dismissed me, I aimed my battered body toward the castle.
See you in the morning, Jenko said with a gleeful sound in his voice.
I turned to tell him where to stick it and came face to face with Valak. I held my breath. He had been watching us. I felt self-conscious. Your punches are slow, he said. Taking my hand, he examined the bruises, which were starting to purple. At least your technique is good. If you hold weights in your hands while you train, your punches will be much quicker without them.
I can continue? I asked in disbelief.
He still held on to my hand, and I couldn't summon the willpower to pull it back. The warmth of his touch coursed through my body, temporarily vanquishing my aches and pains. With the memory of his stunning physical display fresh in my mind, I gazed at his strong face. His flashing and dangerous blue eyes had always taken my attention. I had learned to read his facial expressions as a survival tactic, but I had never really looked at him in this way before. He was a study in contradiction. The man who carved delicate statues was also capable of disarming 7 opponents without breaking a sweat. My interactions with Valak resembled a performance on the tightrope. 1 minute I was confident and balanced, and the next insecure and unstable.
I think it's an excellent idea, he said. How did you get the Power Twins to agree to teach you?
Power Twins?
Combine Ari's strength with Jenko's speed, and they would be unbeatable. But so far I haven't had to test my theory since they haven't tried to fight me together. No one said I couldn't have more than one second in command. You're not going to give me away, are you?
No.
Valak gave my hand a small squeeze, and then released his grip.
Good. They're probably the best instructors at the castle. How did you meet them?
They were the men who found me in the forest. The commander promoted them, and I took advantage of their gratitude. My hand tingled where he had touched it.
Opportunistic and underhanded, I love it, Valak laughed. He was in a good mood as he walked beside me to the castle, probably a rush from beating so many opponents.
Before we reached the east entrance, he stopped.
There's one problem.
My heartbeat increased to double time.
What?
You shouldn't train so visibly. Word spreads quickly. If Brazel finds out and makes a fuss, the commander will order you to stop, and it'll make the commander suspicious.
We entered the cool, dark air of the castle. It was a relief to be out of the hot sun.
Why don't you make use of all those empty storerooms in the lower level of the castle? You can still run laps in the morning for exercise, Valak said.
Great, I thought sarcastically. Jogging was the one aspect of training I would have been willing to give up. However, Valak was right. Working with Ari and Jenko in the middle of the yard had already attracted negative attention. Mainly Nyx, whose scowls and nasty glares burned on my skin. Valak was quiet as we traveled through the castle. I was headed to the commander's office to taste his dinner. He walked with me.
Mentioning Brazel reminds me that I've been wanting to ask you about that Criollo that the commander enjoys. Do you like the taste of it?
I chose my words with care.
Yes, it's an excellent dessert.
If you stopped eating it, how would you feel?
Well, I hesitated, unsure where this conversation was leading.
Truthfully, I would be disappointed. I look forward to eating a piece every morning.
Have you ever craved the Criollo? Valak inquired.
I finally understood where his pointed questions were leading. Like an addiction?
He nodded.
I don't think so, but...
But what?
I only eat it once a day. The commander has a piece after every meal, including his evening snack.
Why this sudden concern? I asked.
Just a feeling. It might be nothing.
Valak was silent during the rest of the trip.
Well, Valak, any new promotions? The commander asked as we entered his office.
No, but Marin shows promise.
Unfortunately, she doesn't want to be in my corps or even be my second. She just wants to beat me.
Valak grinned, delighted by the challenge.
And can she? The commander inquired. His eyebrows rose.
With time and the proper training. She's deadly with her bow. It's just her tactics that need work.
Then what do we do with her?
Promote her to general and retire some of those old windbags. We could use some fresh blood in the upper ranks.
Valak, you never had a good grasp of military structure.
Then promote her to first lieutenant today, captain tomorrow, major the next day, colonel the day after, and general the day after that.
I'll take it under advisement.
The commander flashed me an annoyed glance. I was dawdling, and he had noticed.
Anything else? He asked Valak.
I finished tasting, placed the commander's tray on the desk, and headed for the door. Valak grabbed my arm. I'd like to try an experiment. I want Yelena to taste the Criollo every time you do for a week. Then the next week I'll taste it for you. I want to see if anything happens to her when she stops eating the dessert.
No.
The commander raised a hand when Valak started to argue.
I recognize your concern, but I think it's misplaced.
Humor me.
We can try your experiment once Rand duplicates the recipe from General Brazil. Acceptable?
Yes, sir.
Good. I want you to join me in a meeting with General Kitvivan. We're just starting the cooling season, and he's already worried about snowcats.
The commander's eyes found me.
Yelena, you're dismissed.
Yes, sir, I said. After stopping at the baths to wash, I visited the kitchen to borrow a large sieve and bowl, which I carried to the library. The remaining four pods had turned brown and were starting to rot, so I opened them, scraped out the browning pulp and seeds into the colander, and placed it into the bowl. Its bottom and sides were suspended above the inside of the bowl by the metal handles. The strong odor from the seeds permeated the room. I set the bowl on the windowsill and opened the window to air out the smell. My experiment wasn't based on any scientific research. I just wanted to see if the pulp would ferment. Maybe Brazil was using it to make some kind of alcoholic beverage. My careful reading of the various botany books hadn't revealed anything useful so far. The poison books, while interesting, had made no mention of butterfly's dust. In four different volumes on poisons, I had discovered missing pages. Poking up from the binding were ragged edges where the paper had been ripped out. Valak had probably removed all pertinent information long ago in anticipation of the food taster's keen interest in butterfly's dust. Sighing, I piled the books at the end of my table. I knew Valak was attending the commander's meeting, so I slid the book of magic out of my backpack. The silver lettering of the title glinted. My stomach knotted. Opening the slim volume, I began to read a technical discussion of the source of a magician's power. Unable to understand all of the detailed descriptions, I only sensed that the power source blanketed the entire world, making it accessible from anywhere. The magicians used this power in different ways, depending on their talents. Some could move objects, while others could read and influence minds. Healing, lighting fires, and mental communication were also magical skills. Some could only do one thing, but the stronger the magician, the more the magician could do. A weaker magician could only read someone's mind, while a more powerful one could not only read, but communicate, and even control someone's mind. I shuddered at the thought of Iris controlling my mind. But the magicians had to be careful when drawing power. By pulling on the source too hard or misusing it, a magician could cause creases that would set off a ripple effect. This effect, or warping, would concentrate power in certain areas and leave other places bare. Fluctuating unpredictably, another wave might reverse the amount of power available. In order to tap the power, the magicians would have to seek areas of power, but once they found a pocket, they wouldn't know how long it would remain. The book chronicled a time when a strong magician had tapped into the source, pulling it toward him. Because he was so powerful, he was able to control the blanket without causing an explosion. The other magicians were then uncovered. Stripped of their power, they united and searched for him. Once found, and after a battle that left many dead, they tapped into his stolen source and killed him. Eventually, the blanket had smoothed out and returned to normal, but that had taken over 200 years. Fingering the raised lettering on the cover, I now understood why Iris had been so determined that I should either be trained or be killed.
When my magic reached a flame out, it would cause major ripples in the blanket of power. I sank deep into my chair, disappointed that the book hadn't contained magic spells or lessons. I had been hoping for an answer. Something along the lines of, "This is why you have the power. Here's how you use it. And while we're at it, this is how to conjure up the antidote to butterfly's dust." It had been wishful thinking, plain and simple, dangerous for me to indulge in. Hope, happiness, and freedom were not in my future. They had never been, not even as an ignorant child in Brazil's orphanage. While hoping for a normal life, I had been raised as a laboratory rat for his experiments. I slumped in my chair until the sun set, allowing self-pity to run its course. When the muscles in my legs began to throb with inactivity, I stood and physically shook off my gloom. If I couldn't find the antidote in the books, I would find it another way. Someone had to know something. There had been food tasters on Commander Ambrose's staff for 15 years. If no one could help me, then I would try another way, perhaps stealing the antidote or following Valak to its source. Skills I lacked, but I was determined to learn. The next morning, prepared with an empty stomach, I joined in the flow of jogging soldiers. Ari and Jenko breezed past me. Jenko flashed a jaunty wave and mischievous smile. Later, when I heard heavy steps pounding behind me, I assumed Jenko was up to no good. I moved aside to let him pass, but the runner stayed close on my heels. I glanced back in time to see Nix thrust his arms out, his hands connected with my back. I fell forward, crashing to the ground. As Nix ran over me, his boot slammed into my solar plexus, knocking the wind out of me. Pain bloomed in my chest. I gasped for breath while curled in a fetal position on the ground. Once I regained my wind, I pushed myself to a sitting position. The flow of soldiers remained unabated, and I wondered if anyone had witnessed what that bastard had done. If he was trying to discourage me, he was going about it the wrong way. Nix had just increased my resolve to learn self-defense so I didn't fall victim to mongrels like him. I stood up and waited for Nix's next circuit, but he never came back. Ari stopped. What happened? Nothing. Nix, like Marge, was my problem. If I didn't deal with him, he would never leave me alone. A tingle of doubt touched my stomach. It had been that kind of thinking that had landed me in the dungeon, awaiting execution. "Your face is covered with blood," Ari said. I wiped the blood on my sleeve. I fell. Before he could question me further, I changed the subject by giving him something else to think about. I repeated Valak's advice about concealing our training sessions. Ari agreed that it was prudent to go underground. He offered to scout out a suitable location. "You're Marin, right?" I asked between gasps for air. I had been running laps for a week, and this morning I had timed my pace to run beside Marin. She shot me a quick, appraising glance. Her blonde hair was pulled back in a ponytail. Wide, muscular shoulders atop a thin waist made her figure appear disproportionate. She moved with athletic ease, and I had to scramble to keep up with her long, loping strides. "And you're the puker," Marin said. It was an insult aimed with a purpose. Her interest in my response was keen. If she had wanted to dismiss me, she would have made her comment and sprinted away, not bothering to watch for a reaction. "I've been called worse." "Why do you do it?" Marin asked.
"What?"
"Run till you're sick."
5 circuits were assigned. I don't like to fail.
I received another measuring look. With my words coming out as huffs, I knew I wouldn't be able to maintain a conversation for long. "I watched you fight Valak. I've heard you're the best with a bow. I want to learn to use one." Her pace slowed. "Who told you that?"
"Ari and Jenko."
Marin snorted as if she thought a con artist had duped me. "Friends of yours?"
"Yes."
Her mouth formed a small O as she made a mental connection. "They found you in the forest. It's rumored they were training you to fight, but you quit. Are they foisting you off on me?"
"The problem with rumors," I panted, "is the difficulty in sorting the truth from the lies."
"And the reason I'm willing to donate my time?"
I had anticipated this question.
"Information." "About what?"
You want to beat Valak, right?
Her gray eyes focused on me like two sword points pressing against my skin. With the last of my breath, I wheezed out, "Come to the east entrance of the castle this afternoon at 2 and I'll tell you." Unable to keep up with her any longer, I slowed down. She pulled ahead. I lost sight of her in the press of soldiers. Throughout the rest of the morning, I replayed the conversation in my mind, trying to guess her response as I tasted the commander's meals. At 2 o'clock, I waited in the castle's east doorway, chewing on my lip. Ari and Jenko had spread a rumor that my training had stopped. I'd taken a considerable risk by indicating to Marin that this might not be true. When I spotted a tall figure carrying 2 bows heading in my direction, my anxiety eased a little. Marin paused when she entered the corridor. She spotted me leaning against the wall. Before she could comment, I said, "Follow me." I led her to a deserted hallway where Jenko and Ari waited.
"I guess gossip is not to be trusted," Marin said to Ari.
"No, but there are certain rumors we would like to keep as is." A thinly disguised threat laced Ari's words.
Marin ignored him. "Okay, puker, what's your information? And it better be good, or I'm walking."
Ari's face reddened, and I could see that he bit back a remark. Jenko, as always, grinned in anticipation.
"Well, as I see it, the 4 of us can help each other out. Ari, Jenko, and I want to learn how to fight with the bow. You want to beat Valak. Working together, we may be able to achieve our goals."
"How's my teaching you going to help in a match against Valak?" Marin asked.
"You're skilled with the bow, but your fighting tactics need work. Ari and Jenko can help you with that."
"1 week of training, and the puker thinks she's an expert," Marin said to Ari with an incredulous voice.
He remained mute, but his face darkened.
"I'm not an expert, but Valak is." She shot me a cold stare.
"He said that? About me?"
I nodded.
"So I teach bow, and Ari and Jen teach tactics. What's your contribution?"
I gestured to the 4 of us.
"This. And..." I hesitated, unsure if my next statement would have any sway.
"I could teach you some flips and help you to gain greater flexibility and balance that might benefit you in a fight."
"Damn." Jenko was impressed. "She's got you there. And 4 does make for a better training group than 3.
Annoyed, Marin shifted her focus to Jenko. He smiled sweetly at her.
"All right. I'll try it on a temporary basis. If it doesn't work, I'm walking."
Before anyone could interject, she said,
"Don't worry, I may listen to the rumor mill, but I don't participate in it."
Once we shook hands on the arrangement, my apprehension dissipated. We showed her where we had been meeting for the last week.
"Cozy," Marin said as she entered our training room.
Ari had found an abandoned storeroom on the lower level in the deserted southwest corner of the castle. 2 windows near the ceiling let in enough light to work by. We spent the remaining time practicing the rudiments of bow fighting.
"Not bad, puker," Marin said at the end of the session. "I see some potential."
When she picked up her bows to leave, Ari placed a large hand on her shoulder.
"Her name's Yelena. If you don't want to call her by her name, then don't come back tomorrow."
I could see my astonished expression mirrored on Marin's face, but she recovered quicker than I did. Nodding curtly, she shook off Ari's hand and walked away. I wondered if she would join us again. She returned the next day and showed up without fail for the next 2 months as we trained together throughout the cooling season. The air held a fresh, crisp scent, and true to the season's name, each day grew cooler than the last. The bright flowers of the hot season wilted while the trees turned orange, russet, and finally brown. The leaves dropped to the ground and were blown away by the frequent rainstorms. My research on the pods had stalled, but Valak appeared unconcerned by my lack of progress. On occasion, he observed us training, and he would comment and make suggestions. Nyx continued to plague me during my morning run. He threw rocks, he spat on me, and tripped me. I had to change my routine to avoid him by running laps around the outer wall of the castle complex. My defensive abilities were still in the beginning stages, and not sufficient for a confrontation with Nyx.
at least not yet. There were advantages to running outside the complex. The smooth grass was softer on my feet than the dirt path inside the complex, and by jogging before dawn, I encountered no one, which added to the deception that I had quit training. At the end of the cooling season, the hours of daylight shortened, and our training sessions ended with the setting sun. In the semi-darkness of twilight, I headed to the baths, moving with care to accommodate my bruised ribs. Janko, that annoying jackrabbit, had gotten through my defenses with his speedy little jabs. As I approached the entrance to the baths, a large shadow detached from the stone wall. Alarmed, I stepped back into a fighting stance. Fear, excitement, and doubt raced through my body. Would I need to defend myself? Could I do it? Should I run? Marge's ample shape coalesced out of the shadows, and I relaxed a bit. "What do you want?" I asked. "Are you running another errand for your master like a good doggy?" "Better than being a rat caught in a trap." I brushed past her. Exchanging insults, while enjoyable, was a waste of my time. "Would the rat like some cheese?" she asked. I turned. "What?" "Cheese. Money. Gold. I bet you're the kind of rat that would do anything for a piece of cheese." Chapter 19. "What would I have to do to get a piece of cheese?" I asked. I knew it. Marge was the one leaking information about me, and now she wanted to use me. Finally, some evidence.
"I have a source that pays well for information. It's the perfect setup for a little rat," Marge said.
"What kind of information?"
"Anything you might overhear while you're scurrying around the commander's office or Valak's apartment. My contact pays on a sliding scale. The juicier the news, the bigger the chunk of cheese."
How does it work? My mind raced. Right now it was her word against mine. I needed proof I could show Valak. To be able to finger both Marge and her source would be a sweet treat.
"You give me the information," she said, "and I pass it along. I collect the money and give it to you, minus a 15% fee."
"And I'm supposed to believe that you'd stick to 15% cut of a total I'd be unaware of?" She shrugged.
"It's either that or nothing. I'd think that a half-starved rat like you would pounce on any morsel, no matter how small."
Marge began to walk away. "What if we went to your source together?" I suggested. "Then you'd still receive your fee." She stopped. Uncertainty creased her fleshy face.
"I'll have to check."
She disappeared down the hallway. I lingered outside the baths for a while, considering the possibility of following Marge around for a couple of days, but dismissed the idea. If her contact didn't like my suggestion, I'd scamper to Marge with my tail between my legs, begging for another chance. She'd enjoy that. Then I'd follow her. Revealing her as a traitor to Valak would be a pleasure. My conversation with Marge had used up my bath time, so I headed to the commander's office. When I arrived, Sammy, Rand's kitchen boy, hovered outside the closed door holding a tray of food. I could hear a muffled, angry voice inside. "What's going on?" I asked Sammy.
"They're arguing," he said.
"Who?"
"The commander and Valak."
I took the tray of cooling food from Sammy. No reason we both had to be there. "Get going. I'm sure Rand needs you." Sammy smiled his relief and sprinted through the throne room. I'd seen the kitchen during dinner time. Servers and cooks swarmed like bees with Rand directing the chaos. Barking orders, he controlled his kitchen staff like the queen bee of the hive. Knowing the commander disliked cold food, I stood close to his door, waiting for a break in the conversation. From my new position, I could hear Valak clearly.
"Whatever possessed you to change your successor?" Valak demanded.
The commander's soft reply passed through the wooden door as an indecipherable murmur.
"In the 15 years I've known you, you've never reversed a decision." Valak's tone became more reasonable. "This isn't a ploy to discover your successor. I just want to know why you changed your mind. Why now?"
The response wasn't to Valak's liking. With a sarcastic jab in his voice, he said, "Always, sir." Valak jerked the door open. I stumbled into the office. He wore a glacial expression. Only his eyes showed his fury. They were pools of molten lava beneath an icy crust.
"Yelena, where the hell have you been? The commander's waiting for his dinner."
Not expecting an answer, Valak strode briskly through the throne room. Advisors and soldiers melted from his path. Valak's anger seemed extreme. Everyone in Ixion knew that one of the 8 generals had been chosen as the commander's successor. In the typical paranoid custom of the commander's ruling, the name of the selected general was kept secret. Each general held an envelope that contained a piece of a puzzle. When the commander died, they would assemble the puzzle to reveal an encrypted message. A key would be required to decipher the note, a key only Valak held. The chosen general would then have the complete support of the military and the commander's staff. The theory behind the puzzle was that secrecy would prevent someone from staging a rebellion in support of the chosen heir, since the heir was unknown. The added risk that the inheritor might be even worse than the commander was another deterrent. As far as I could see, a change in the chosen general probably wouldn't affect day-to-day life in Ixia. We didn't know who had been originally selected, so the switch would have no bearing until the commander died. I approached Commander Ambrose's desk. He read his reports, unaffected by Valak's rage. I performed a quick taste of his dinner. He thanked me for the food, then ignored me. On my way back to the baths, I wondered if the information I had just overheard would fetch a decent price for Marge's contact. I quenched my curiosity. I had no desire to commit treason for money. I just wanted to get out of my present situation alive. And knowing Valak, I had no doubt that he would discover any clandestine meetings with Marge. For that reason alone, I had to prove that, no matter what Marge believed, I was not a spy. Just the mental vision of Valak's burning eyes focused on me sent a hot bolt of fear through me. A long soak in the bath eased my sore ribs. As it was still early in the evening, I thought it prudent to avoid Valak for a while. I stopped in the kitchen for a late dinner. After helping myself to the leftover roast meat and a hunk of bread, I carried my plate to where Rand worked. He had an array of bowls, pots, and ingredients messily spread out on his table. Dark smudges rimmed his bloodshot eyes, and his brown hair stuck straight out where he had run his wet hands through it. I found a stool in a clean corner on Rand's table and ate my dinner.
"Did the commander send you?" Rand asked.
"No. Why?"
"I finally received the Criollo recipe from Ving 2 days ago. I thought the commander might be wondering about it."
"He hasn't said anything to me." 2 large shipments of Criollo, sans the recipe, had arrived for the commander since Brazel had left the castle. Each time, the commander had responded with a thank you and another request for the formula. As the quantity received had been plentiful, the commander had given Rand some Criollo to play with. Rand hadn't disappointed. He had melted it, mixed it into hot drinks, invented new desserts, chipped it and remolded it into flowers and other edible decorations for cakes and pies. I watched Rand stir a mahogany-colored batter with tight, agitated movements. "How's it going?" I asked.
"Horrible. I have repeatedly followed this recipe, and all I've gotten is this awful-tasting mud."
Rand banged the spoon on the bowl's edge to knock off the pasty residue.
"It won't even solidify."
He handed me a sheet of once white paper smeared with brown stains and flour.
"Maybe you can see what I'm doing wrong."
I studied the list of ingredients. It looked like a normal recipe, but I wasn't a cooking expert. Tasting, on the other hand, was becoming my forte. I took a scoop of his batter and slid it onto my tongue. A sickeningly sweet flavor invaded my mouth. The texture was smooth, and the batter coated my tongue like Criollo, but it lacked the nutty, slightly bitter taste that balanced the sweetness.
"Maybe the recipe's wrong," I said, handing the sheet back to Rand.
"Put yourself in Ving's position. Commander Ambrose loves Criollo, and you hold the only copy of the recipe. Would you give it away, or would you use it to manipulate a transfer?" Rand plopped wearily onto a stool.
"What do I do? If I can't make Criollo, the commander will probably reassign me.
It'll be too much for my ego to stand. He attempted a weak smile.
Tell the commander that the recipe's a fake. Blame Ving for your inability to duplicate the Criollo.
Sighing, Rand rubbed his face in his hands. I can't handle this type of political pressure. He massaged his eyelids with the tips of his long fingers. Right now, I'd kill for a cup of coffee, but I guess wine will have to do.
He rummaged around in the cabinet and produced a bottle and two glasses.
Coffee? You're too young to remember, but before the takeover, we imported this absolutely wonderful drink from Cydia. When the commander closed the border, we lost an endless list of luxury items. Of all those, I miss coffee the most.
What about the black market, I asked.
Rand laughed. It's probably available, but there's nowhere in this castle that I could make it without being discovered.
I'll most likely regret asking you this, but why not?
The smell. The coffee's rich and distinct aroma would give me away. The scent of brewing coffee can weave its way throughout the entire castle. I woke up to it every morning before the takeover.
Rand sighed again.
My mother's job was to grind the coffee beans and fill the pots with water. It's very similar to brewing tea, but the taste is far superior.
I sat up straighter on my stool when I heard the word beans. What color are coffee beans?
Brown. Why?
Just curious, I said in a calm tone, but excitement boiled within me. My mystery beans were brown, and Brazel was old enough to know about coffee. Maybe he missed the drink and planned to manufacture it. My efforts to ferment the pod's pulp had resulted in a thin, chestnut-colored liquid that tasted rotten. The purple seeds inside the pulp had been sopping wet and covered with flies. I had closed the window and dried the seeds on the windowsill. As they dried, the seeds turned to brown and looked and tasted like the beans from the caravan. Thrilled to link the pods with the beans, my excitement had faded when I hadn't been able to learn anything further.
Does coffee taste sweet? I asked.
No, it's bitter.
My mother used to add sugar and milk to half of her finished pots, but I liked it plain.
My beans were bitter. I couldn't sit still any longer. I had to find out if Valak remembered coffee. I felt uncomfortable asking Rand, unsure if Valak wanted him to know about the southern pods. After bidding farewell to Rand, who stared morosely into the failed batter as he drank his wine, I rushed back into Valak's suite. The sound of slamming books greeted my entrance. Valak stormed around the living room, kicking piles of books over. Gray rock debris littered the floor and clung to impact craters on the walls. He clenched a stone in each fist. I had wanted to discuss my coffee hypothesis with him, but decided to wait. Unfortunately, Valak spotted me staring.
"What do you want?" he snarled.
"Nothing," I mumbled and fled to my room. For 3 days I endured Valak's temper. He vented his ill humor on me at every opportunity. Thrusting the antidote at me, speaking curtly, if at all, and glaring whenever I entered a room. Weary of avoiding him and hiding in my room, I decided to approach him. He sat at his desk, his back to me.
I may have discovered what those beans are. It was a weak opening. What I really wanted to say was, "What the hell's the matter with you?" But I thought a soft approach more prudent.
He swiveled to face me. The energy of his anger had dissipated, replaced by a bone-chilling cold.
"Really?" His voice lacked conviction. The fire in his eyes had extinguished.
I stepped back. His indifference was more frightening than his anger.
I swallowed, my mouth dry. "I was talking to Rand, and he mentioned missing coffee.
Do you remember coffee? A southern drink?"
"No."
"I think our beans might be coffee. If you don't know what coffee is, perhaps I should show them to Rand. If that's all right with you?"
I faltered. My suggestion had sounded like a child pleading for a sweet.
"Go ahead. Share your ideas with Rand. Your buddy. Your best friend. You're just like him." Icy sarcasm spiked Valak's words. I was stunned.
"What?"
"Do as you like. I don't care." Valak turned his back on me. I stumbled to my room and then locked the door with shaky fingers. Leaning against the wall, I replayed the last week in my mind to see if there had been some clue to Valak's withdrawal. I could remember nothing that stood out. We had barely said a word to each other, and I had believed his anger had been directed toward the commander. Until now. Maybe he had discovered my magic book. Perhaps he suspected I had some magical power. Fear replaced my confusion. Lying on my bed that night, I stared at the door. With every nerve tingling, I waited for Valak's attack. I knew I was overreacting, but I was unable to stop. I couldn't erase the way he had looked at me as if I was already dead. Dawn arrived, and I moved through my day like a zombie. Valak ignored me. Even Jenko's ever-present good humor couldn't snap me out of my funk. I waited a few days before bringing the beans along to show Rand. He was in better spirits. A big smile graced his face, and he greeted me with an offer of a cinnamon swirl. "I'm not hungry," I said.
"You haven't eaten in days. What's the matter?" Rand asked.
I dodged his question by asking about the Criollo.
"Your plan worked. I informed the commander that Ving's recipe was wrong. He said he'd take care of it. Then he inquired about the kitchen staff. Were they working well? Did I need more help? I just stared at him because I felt like I was in the wrong room. I'm usually greeted with suspicion and dismissed with a threat."
"That doesn't sound like a good relationship."
Rand stacked a few bowls and straightened a row of spoons. His smile faded.
"My interaction with the commander and Valak could be considered rocky at best. Being rather young and rebellious right after the takeover, I attempted every trick of sabotage possible. I served the commander sour milk, stale bread, rotten vegetables, and even raw meat. At that point, I was just looking to be a nuisance."
He picked up a spoon and tapped it against his knee.
"It became a battle of wills. The commander was determined that I cook for him, and I was determined to either be arrested or be reassigned."
Thump, thump, thump went the spoon, and Rand continued his story, his voice husky.
"Then Valak made my mother the food taster. That was before they implemented that damn code of behavior. I couldn't bear to have her taste the garbage I served the commander."
Old sorrows pulled at Rand's features. He twirled the spoon in circles between his fingers. Words failed me. Dread crept up my spine as I contemplated the fate of Rand's mother.
"After the inevitable happened, I tried to run away, but they caught me just shy of the southern border."
Rand rubbed his left knee.
"They shattered my kneecap, hobbling me like some damn horse. Threatened to do my other leg if I ran again. And here I am."
He snorted, sweeping all the spoons off the table. They clattered on the stone floor.
"Shows you how much I've changed. The command is nice to me, and I'm happy. I used to dream of poisoning the bastard, of taking that final step in our battle. But I have this weakness of caring for the food taster. When Oskov died, I promised myself never to care again."
Rand pulled out a bottle of wine.
"Only I failed. Again."
He retreated to his rooms. I hunched over the table, regretting that my comment had caused Rand pain. My pockets bulged uncomfortably with the beans. I shifted in my seat. Liza would have good cause when she blamed this mood swing on me. Valak's actions with Rand's mother seemed harsh from Rand's perspective. But when I thought about it from Valak's point of view, it made sense. His job was to protect the commander. I lived the next 2 days in a fog. Events blurred together. Tasting, training, tasting, training. Ari's and Jenko's curses and attempts to rouse me remained unsuccessful. The news that I could start knife defense failed to produce any enthusiasm. My body felt as wooden as the bow I held. When Marge materialized after one of my training sessions to inform me that a meeting with her contact had been scheduled for the following evening, it was with great difficulty that I summoned the strength to rally. I thought out each possible scenario, and each combination of events kept leading me to one conclusion. Who would believe me if I reported the meeting? No one. I needed a witness who could also act as a protector. Ari's name sprang to mind. But I didn't want any suspicion to fall on him if something went wrong. It was also possible that Marge's contact had a boss, or a whole network of informers, and I could be getting in over my head.
Dance as I might, there was but one course of action, and it led to but one person, Valak. I dreaded the encounter. My interaction with him had dwindled to the silent, awkward dispensing of my antidote every morning. But after tasting the commander's dinner, I sought Valak out, my stomach performing flips. His office was locked, so I tried his suite. He wasn't in the living room, but I heard a faint sound from upstairs. A thin slash of light glowed under the door to Valak's carving studio. A metallic grinding noise raised goosebumps on my flesh. I faltered at the entrance. This was probably the worst time to disturb him, but I was to meet Marge's contact the next day. I had no time to waste. Gathering courage, I knocked and opened the door without waiting for an answer. Valak's lantern flickered. He stopped grinding. The wheel spun in silence, reflecting pinpricks of light that whirled along the walls and ceiling. He asked, "What is it?" "I've had an offer. Someone wants to pay me for information about the commander." He spun around. His face was half hidden in shadows, but it was as rigid as the stone he held.
"Why tell me?"
"I thought you might want to follow along. This might be the one who has been leaking information about me." He stared at me. I wished then that I held a heavy rock because I had the sudden desire to bash it on his head. "Espionage is illegal. You might want to make an arrest or maybe even feed this leak some misinformation. You know, spy stuff. Remember? Or have you become bored with that too?" Anger fueled my words. I took a breath to launch into an attack, but it slid unvoiced past my clenched teeth. There was a slight softening in Valak's face. Renewed interest emanated from him, as if he had been holding every muscle taut and had just relaxed. "Who?" he asked finally. "And when?" "Marge approached me, and she mentioned a contact. We're meeting tomorrow night." I studied his expression. Was he surprised or hurt by Marge's treachery? I couldn't tell. Reading Valak's true mood was like trying to decipher a foreign language. "All right. Proceed as planned. I'll tail you to the rendezvous and see who we're dealing with. We'll start by feeding this contact some accurate information to make you look reliable. Perhaps the commander's change of successor would work. It's harmless information that will be made public anyway. Then we'll go from there." We outlined the details. Even though I was placing my life in danger, I felt cheerful. I had my old Valak back. But for how long? I wondered as wariness crept back in. When we were through, I turned to go. "Yelena." I halted in the doorway, looking back over my shoulder. "You once said I wasn't ready to believe your reason for killing Rayard. I'll believe you now." "But I'm not ready to tell you," I said, and left the room. Chapter 20. Damn Valak. Damn him. Gave me the cold shoulder for 4 days and then expected me to trust him? I'd admitted to murder. They'd arrested the right person. That was all he should care about. Walking down the stairs in the darkness, I headed toward my room. I have to get out of this place, I thought with sudden intensity. The overwhelming desire to take off and damn the antidote was strong. "Run away, run away, run away," sang in my mind, a familiar tune. I had heard it before when I was with Rayard. Memories I had thought were tightly locked away now threatened to push free, seeping through the cracks. Damn Valak! It was his fault I couldn't suppress my memories any longer. In my room, I locked the door. When I turned around, I spied Rayard's ghost lounging on my bed. The wound in his neck hung open, and blood stained his nightshirt black. In contrast, his blonde hair was combed in the latest style, his mustache groomed to perfection, and his light blue eyes glowed. "Get out," I said. He was, I reminded myself, an intangible ghost and not, absolutely not, to be feared.
"What kind of greeting is that for an old friend?" Rayard asked.
He lifted a book on poisons off my nightstand and flipped through the pages. I stared at him in shock.
He spoke in my mind. He held a book. A ghost. A ghost, I kept repeating.
Riyad was unaffected. He laughed.
You're dead, I said. Aren't you supposed to be burning in eternal damnation? Riyad wasn't banished so easily.
Teacher's pet, he said, waving the book in the air. If only you had worked this hard for me, everything would have been different.
I liked the way it turned out.
Poisoned, pursued, and living with a psychopath. Not what I would consider the good life. Death has its perks, he sniffed. I get to watch your miserable existence. You should have chosen the noose, Yelena. It would have saved you some time.
Get out, I said again, trying to ignore the touch of hysteria in my voice and the trickle of sweat down my back.
You do know you'll never get to Scythia alive.
You're a failure. Always were. Always will be. Face it. Accept it. Riyad rose from the bed.
You failed all our efforts to mold you. Do you remember? Remember when Daddy finally gave up on you? When he let me have you?
I remembered. It had been the week of the fire festival, and Riyad had been so preoccupied with General Tesso's visiting retinue, especially Tesso's daughter, Kanna, that he hadn't bothered to check on me. Since I'd been meekly obeying his every command to gain some trust, he was smug in the assumption that he'd cowed me into submission. As a result, it was more than a month since he'd locked me into my tiny room that was next to his suite. But the festival had once again tempted me into disobeying Riyad's instructions to stay away. The beatings and humiliations of the year before were insufficient to deter me this year. In fact, I felt a stubborn pride in refusing to be intimidated by him. I was terrified of getting caught, knew deep down in a small corner of my mind that I would get caught, but I threw all caution to fate. The fire festival was a part of me. The only time I tasted true freedom, even though it was for but a few moments, it was worth the consequences. My defiance added an edge to my acrobatic routines, making me bold and reckless. I sailed through the first 5 rounds with aplomb, dismount steady, flips tight, energy level unlimited. I advanced to the final round of competition, which was scheduled for the last day of the festival. I scrambled to put the finishing touches on my costume for the competition, while Riyad guided Kanna and a group of friends on a hunting party in the countryside. I had scrounged around the manor for the preceding 2 weeks to acquire the necessary supplies for my attire. Now I stitched scarlet silk feathers onto a black leotard, and then outlined them with silver sequins. Wings tied to a harness completed the outfit, but I folded them small and flat so they wouldn't impede my motion. Braiding my hair into one long rope, I wound it tightly around my head and secured 2 flaming red feathers in the back. Pleased with the results, I arrived early at the acrobatics tent to practice. When the competition started, the tent bulged with people. The crowd's cheers soon dimmed to a dull roar in my ears as I performed my routines. The only sounds reaching me were the thump of my hands and feet on the trampoline, the creaking of the tightrope as I launched myself in midair to execute a 2.5 twist, and the crack of the slender rope when I landed on it without falling. The floor routine was my last event. I stood on the balls of my feet at the edge of the mat, breathing deeply. The heavy, earthy smell of sweat and the dry scratch of chalk dust filled my lungs. This was my place. This was where I belonged. The air vibrated like a thunderstorm poised to blow in. Energized as lightning, I started my first tumbling run. I flew that night. Spinning and diving through the air, my feet hardly touched the ground. My spirit soared. I felt like a bird performing aerial tricks for sheer delight. At the end of my last run, I grabbed my wings with both hands. Pulling them open, I raised them over my head as I somersaulted and landed on my feet. The bright scarlet fabric of the wings billowed out behind me. The crowd's thunderous cheers vibrated deep in my chest. My soul floated with crimson wings on the updraft of the audience's jubilant praise. I won the competition. Pure, uncomplicated joy consumed me, and I grinned for the first time in 2 years. Face muscles aching from smiling, I stood on the platform to receive the prize from the Master of Ceremonies. He settled a blood-red amulet, shaped like flames and engraved with the year and event, on my chest. It was the greatest moment of my entire life, followed by the worst, as I spotted Rayad and Kanna watching me from the crowd. Kanna was beaming, but Rayad's expression was hard and unforgiving, as suppressed rage leaked from his twitching lips. I lingered inside the changing room until everyone had gone. There were two exits to the tent, but Rayad had positioned his guards at both. Knowing Rayad would take my amulet and destroy it, I buried it deep under the earthen floor of the room. As I expected, Rayad grabbed me as soon as I stepped from the tent. He dragged me back to the manor. General Brazel was consulted. He agreed that I would never be one of his group. Too independent, too stubborn, and too willful, Brazel said, and gave me over to his son. No more experiments. I had failed. That night, Rayad just managed to control his temper until we were alone in his room. But once the door was closed and locked, he vented his full anger with his fists and feet.
I wanted to kill you for disobeying me, Rayad's ghost said as he glided across my room. I planned to savor it over a very long period of time, but you beat me to it. You must have had that knife tucked under my mattress for quite a while.
He paused, creasing his brow in thought. I had stolen and hidden a knife under Rayad's bed a year before, after he had beaten me for practicing. Why his bed? I had no real strategy, just a terrible foreboding that when I needed it, I would be in Rayad's room and not in my small room next door. Dreaming of murder was easy. Committing it was another story. Even though I'd endured much pain that year, I hadn't crossed the threshold of sanity until that night.
Did something set you off? The ghost asked. Or were you procrastinating like now? Learning to fight, he chuckled. Imagine you fighting off an attacker. You wouldn't last against a direct assault.
I should know. He floated before me, forcing the memories out. I flinched from him and from that night's recollection.
Go away, I said to the specter.
Picking up the book on poisons, I stretched out on my bed, determined to ignore him. He faded slightly as I read, but brightened whenever I glanced his way.
Was it my journal that set you off?
Rayad asked when my eyes lingered too long.
No!
The word sprang from my mouth, surprising me. I had convinced myself that his journal had been the final straw after 2 years of torment. The painful memories flooded with a force that shook me and left me trembling. After I had regained consciousness from the beating, I'd found myself sprawled naked on Rayad's bed. Flourishing his journal before me, he ordered me to read it, taking pleasure in watching the growing horror on my face. His journal had listed every single grievance he had against me for the 2 years I'd been with him. Every time I disobeyed or annoyed him, he noted it, then followed with a specific description of how he would punish me. Now that Brazel no longer needed me for his experiments, Rayad had no boundaries. His sadistic inclinations and overwhelming depth of imagination were written in full detail. As I struggled to breathe, my first thought was to find the knife and kill myself, but the blade was on the other side of the bed near the headboard.
We'll start with the punishment on page 1 tonight.
Rayad purred with anticipation as he crossed to his toy chest, pulling from it chains and other implements of torture. I flipped back to the beginning with numb fingers. Page 1 recorded that I had failed to call him sir the first time we met, and for lacking the proper deference, I would assume a submissive position on my hands and knees and then be whipped. He would demand that I call him sir. With each lash, I would respond with the words, "More, sir, please." During the following rape, I would address him as sir and beg him to continue my punishment. His journal slipped from my paralyzed hands. I flung myself over the bed, intent on finding the knife, but Rayad, thinking I was trying to escape, caught me. My struggles were useless as he forced me to my knees. With my face pressed into the rough stone floor, Rayad chained my hands behind my neck. The anticipation was more frightening than the actual event. In a sick way, it was a comfort, because I knew what to expect and when he would stop. I played my part, understanding that if I denied him his intended moves, I would only enrage him further. When the horror finally ceased, blood covered my back and coated the insides of my legs. I curled into a ball on the edge of Rayad's bed, my mind dead, my body throbbing. His fingers were inside me. Where he would always be, he breathed into my ear as he lay beside me. This time the knife was within my reach. My thoughts lingered on suicide. Then Rayad said,
"I guess I'll have to start a new journal."
I did not respond.
"We'll be training a new girl now that you've failed."
He sat up and dug his fingers deeper into me.
"Up on your knees. Time for page 2.
"No," I screamed. "You won't." Fumbling for a frantic second, I pulled the knife out and sliced at his throat. A surface cut only, but he fell back on the bed in surprise. I leaped onto his chest, slashing deeper. The blade scraped bone. Blood sprayed. A warm feeling of satisfaction settled over me when I realized I could no longer determine whose blood pooled between my thighs.
"So that's what set you off? The fact that I was going to rape you again?" Rayad's ghost asked.
"No. It was the thought of you torturing another girl from the orphanage."
"Oh, yes," he snorted. "Your friends."
"My sisters," I corrected. "I killed you for them, but I should have done it for me." Anger surged through my body. I cornered him. My fist struck out, even though I knew in a tiny part of my mind that I couldn't hurt him. His smug expression never changed, but I punched again and again until the first rays of dawn touched Rayad's ghost. He vanished from sight. Sobbing, I sank to the floor. After a while, I became aware of my surroundings. My fists were bloodied from hitting the rough stone wall. I was exhausted and drained of all emotions. And I was late for breakfast. Damn Valak.
"Pay attention," Ari said. He jabbed me in the stomach with a wooden knife. "You're dead. That's the fourth time today. What's the matter?"
"Lack of sleep," I said. "Sorry."
Ari gestured me to the bench along the wall. We sat down and watched Marin and Jenko, engaged in a friendly bow match on the far side of the storeroom. Jenko's speed had overpowered Marin's skill, and she was on the retreat, backing into a corner.
"She's tall and thin, but she's not going to win," Jenko sang.
His words aimed to infuriate her, a tactic that had worked before. Too often, Marin's anger caused her to make critical mistakes. But this time, she remained calm. She planted the end of her bow between his feet, which trapped his weapon close to his body. Then she flipped over his head, landed behind him, and grabbed him around the neck until he conceded. My bleak mood improved a notch watching Marin use something I had taught her. The indignant expression on Janko's face was priceless. He insisted on a rematch. They launched into another rowdy duel. Ari and I remained on the bench. I think Ari sensed that I had no energy to continue our lesson. "Something's wrong," he said in a quiet voice. "What is it?" I stopped, unsure of my answer. Should I tell him about Valak's cold shoulder and change of heart? Or about my night-long conversation with the ghost of the man I'd murdered? No. Instead, I asked him, "Do you think this is a waste of time?" Rayad's words about procrastination had held a ring of truth. Perhaps the time I spent training was merely a subconscious ploy to avoid solving my real problems. "If I thought this was a waste of time, I wouldn't be here." A trace of anger colored Ari's voice. "You need this, Yelena." "Why? I might die before I even have a chance to use it." "As I see it, you're already good at running and hiding. It took you a week to get up the nerve to talk to Marin. And if it was up to you, she'd still be calling you puker. You need to learn to stand and fight for what you want." Ari fidgeted with the wooden knife, spinning it around his hand. "You hover on the edges, ready to take off if something goes wrong. But when you can knock the bow from Jenko's hands and sweep my feet out from under me, you'll be empowered." He paused and then said, "If you feel you need to spend your time on something else, then do it, in addition to your training. Then the next time someone calls you puker, you'll have the confidence to tell her to go to hell." I was amazed at Ari's assessment of me. I couldn't even say if I agreed or disagreed with him.
but I did know he was right about my compulsion to do something else. He didn't know what it was, but I did. Find the antidote to butterfly's dust.
Is that your idea of encouragement? I asked in a shaky voice.
Yes. Now quit looking for an excuse to stop training and trust me. What else do you need?